Chris Gibson, I'm so delighted to see you again. As you know, you're one of my favorite people, or maybe you don't know that, but you are. And I wanted to ask you this question. As we speak, we are celebrating the anniversary of Katrina and the devastation that happened in New Orleans. So I guess the question to you is, although you were on your way to Iraq, you were jumping out of planes, you were really in personal danger over there, but as a congressman, do you think about whether or not this country is fully prepared for these kinds of emergencies?
Well, I can say a couple things. First of all, as you led off with, 24 hours before the hurricane hit New Orleans, I was literally waiting on an airplane to fly back to Iraq for what would have been my third combat tour over there. And, you know, I remember sitting next to my commanding general, who was just seeing us off. My battalion, about 800 paratroopers, and he was basically wishing us well. And I looked at him and I said, "Do you think you're en route to New Orleans? I mean, certainly this looks bad." And they were fully prepared to go. And, they shortly, 72 hours later, as my unit was integrating into northern Iraq in Nineveh province in Tal Afar, the 82nd Airborne Division got the orders to go. And I know that—
To New Orleans.
So I missed, I was very much ensconced in the day-to-day activities in Iraq, and so I personally missed the tragedy and following it on a day-by-day basis. But I remember hearing when I got back from Iraq and hearing from others in my unit, in the 82nd, the broader unit, the 82nd, about what they had seen. It was like nothing that some of my friends had ever seen in their life before.
And these were seasoned soldiers.
Absolutely. They had been through all, the recent deployments and everything like that, and just the absolute devastation that had been visited on New Orleans and the surrounding areas. As a congressman, I'll tell you, I've seen, obviously, Hurricanes Irene, Lee, and Sandy. And in myself, my office, we were just completely ensconced in that recovery. And, even to this day, I still have activities that I'm involved with as far as both finalizing the recovery and then also working on mitigation. Let's remember that $1 billion out of the $60 billion went towards climate change. It went towards reacting to the changing weather patterns and the increase in the frequency and the potency of these storms so that, we can have resilience as we deal with, these weather events that may bring us double-digit inch rain in a short period of time, the rising sea levels, the salinity issues. So, we know about it today as this New York Rising program, which candidly I've been disappointed and underwhelmed with. So, we're constantly engaged on that. And, I do think that there's a way forward because really the burden of your question is, are we prepared? And I don't think where we should be today. You look at Vermont, our neighbor just to the east. They actually embraced what was called the Colorado approach to dealing with climate change. And it basically is, in a nutshell, this. You have streams. And wherever you can, you try to allow for floodplains so that the stream or the river can breathe. And in places where you just can't because it's built up and people live there, then you can take some maintenance to prepare, whatever that may be. In some cases, it's a little bit of dredging. Other places, it's a levee. But that should not be the primary approach to deal with these increasing frequency and potency of storms. Because here's the problem. If you just do that, if all you're doing is maintenance, what you're doing is you're making the river, the stream, all of that more potent so that when it finally hits downstream, it takes out the community. So because, essentially it picks up energy, the stream in the water event picks up energy. And so our response should really be to take the energy out of the event.
And how do we do that?
With the floodplain. I mean, in places where you can, and I'm thinking I should be more explicit, we're most at danger is the Catskill Mountain region, which is over five counties. And, we are not where we should be on that. We have taken some action, which is good, But I'm still concerned that if we had a major event, you know, something in the double-digit inch of rain in an hour or two, we would be potentially at risk again. So not that we haven't had some plans, but, you know, I've been interacting with the DEC and the DEP on this issue, and I'm really sort of pushing us to come to closure on how we're going to do this.
So I don't want to give you a hard time, but there's much speculation that you might run for governor. If you were governor of New York State, and let's figure that the feds aren't doing what they ought to be doing, what would you do?
Well, thank you for raising the issue, and I am very seriously looking at it. I won't make a final decision until the end of my term here in this Congress. But yes, I mean, it's fair to raise the question because when I say I'm giving it a serious look, I mean, into fine point detail, how much money I would need to raise, how long it would take me to raise that money, where the coalitions, the voting coalitions would need to come from, how realistic is that? All of these things, you know, I want to make sure that we have a realistic plan if we move forward because it is a challenge. Look, in a state that 49% of the enrolled voters are Democrats, 23.5% are enrolled Republican, these are realities. And this is a really steep mountain to climb. I believe it can be climbed, but there has to be a very much a developed, realistic plan. Now, as it relates to your question, you know, given these experiences in the last 5 years, yes, I mean, not only myself, but my team have some very decided views on what needs to happen. And, you know, I certainly received a fair amount of criticism from the right, or at least the far right, as far as voting for Sandy Aid. It was the right thing to do. It was no doubt. I was always going to vote for this. But, you know, when they were crafting the legislation, the authors didn't necessarily know that. So we worked with them to get language to make sure that upstate New York communities would also benefit from this mitigation money, this reservoir of money that would help with dealing with climate change. So,
but Chris, I'm sorry to interrupt. We've only got 2 minutes left, but you did talk about the expansion of the floodplain, and that got me to thinking about, you know, the fact that that we have been warned again and again that some places are underwater. You know, New Orleans is basically a city underwater. You can't bury your dead. Should we be, in fact, saying there's some places people shouldn't live?
Well, you know, as I pointed out, so it is this two-pronged approach. It is the floodplains, and in areas where we have people living, we have to make an assessment. Are there, you know, man-made actions that we can take to really shore up the community? And never will we be able to bring the risk to zero, but can we manage the risk where we think that they can continue to have a vital, flourishing life in where they're at? Now, I will tell you that we've been engaged in some communities in discussions of moving some aspects of the hamlet up the hill a little bit and, you know, looking at development going forward in the next 25 years or so and how might the community evolve so that, you know, it takes it out of risk. It's not an unfair question to ask, and it is one that we have to bring the bare science to the issue so that, you know, we have to be able to make probabilities. So again, you know, the approach really needs to be, and I would say aggressive, we need to be more proactive on this, is recognizing the fact that, look, climate change is, it's not that it's coming, it's already here. And in as much as we need to take human action to help attenuate that, this is coming, and it's going to continue throughout this century, and we need to take smart action to prevent the loss of life and property.
Chris Gibson, always a great pleasure and an honor to have you here with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.